Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I apologize.
You should.
I am sorry. I absolutely said the wrong thing.
Oh, terrible.
No, I'm being totally... You guys are laughing at me, but I'm being totally serious.
We got a long list. What are you apologizing for?
This text. Jor, seriously? You just said good thing you have girls when referring to Adam's daughters. It was David's daughters. Girls play hockey, too. We don't just dance.
Yeah.
Hashtag sad fan. You know what, Texter? You are 100% right, and I was 1,000% wrong.
You want women
lost
in the kitchen.
My mind.
They have no business playing sports. I've heard you say it many times off the air.
I lost my mind. No, I... no,
wait, women's sports? What planet is this?
Oh, stop digging my grave that I started digging myself.
Wait till they learn how to drive. Then they're really in trouble.
Oh, boy. And voting. Don't get me started on voting.
Oh, my God. I honestly can't believe I said that. I am so embarrassed. Someone asked me what my most embarrassing moment on the air was this morning. I think this might be it.
Which day are you talking about?
Right. I said, well, there's a list, but this actually might be it. I do feel penitent. I am so sorry. And
well, you might have been thinking of my girls do dance.
And, Adam's girls dance.
And
yes,
saying, maybe you just meant you were thinking, thankfully, your kids don't play.
And mine don't play. Yeah.
Right.
And no disrespect.
No.
I said the wrong thing. It's live radio. I'm so sorry. My bad. Mm-hmm. Please accept my
apology. Just record all that and we'll just play that periodically throughout the show
or any
given show.
I feel terrible.
The list of the top pet names in the Twin Cities is out for 2024. The top names this year for dogs, top five, Luna, followed by Charlie, Lucy, Teddy, and Milo. The top names for cats, get this, also Luna. That's right, the top name for dogs and cats is the same.
Luna's been around for a long time.
What followed are we doing with the Luna?
It's like a moon reference, right?
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you know any cats named Luna? Or dogs?
Ooh.
I purposely try not to know any cats because they try to kill me with their existence.
I don't.
I've
heard that name, though.
I do know a dog named Luna.
Luna is a popular character in the Harry Potter novels.
Okay.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's from then? Harry Potter?
Very well might be. Yes. Yeah. Luna is
absolutely. We got to bring, Bruce would be a good name for a dog.
Totally. We need more. I love when people name their dogs.
Like human names. Bruce. Yeah. Steve.
I know a
Howard.
Bruce cat.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, Howard is the wiener dog that lives a couple doors
down. Oh, that's a great name for
that. Howard's a great name.
Yeah. I feel like wiener dogs often get grown man names.
Yeah.
I knew another wiener dog. His name was Steven.
Steven.
And they called him Steven.
Steve.
No, they called him Steven.
Steven.
I know two wiener dogs in the same family named Oscar and Coney.
Cute.
That's pretty good, right?
Oscar, Coney. Oh, God. Okay, so what was the question?
Yeah, I don't know.
Are we surprised?
Yeah.
Mine's Nala.
Names. Funny pet names.
That's like a take on Luna, but it's not. Nala's from The
what
Lion
is Nala?
King.
Oh, okay.
Nala was the female lion. And I told the kids, I'm like, you understand lions are cats and we have a dog. And they're like, well, she's small and fluffy and they were little and we're going to name her Nala. And I'm like, okay. So
my daughter,
the kids weren't very bright.
Texter says my daughter's parrot's name is Luna.
Wow.
And we have a cat named Luna. Her full name is Lunatic Underfoot.
Oh, okay. That happens. Parrot, not parent.
Parrot. Yeah.
Parrot. Okay, I think that's enough pet name talk for the entire year. On to something much more important. MnDOT is out with its annual Name a Snowplow contest, accepting submissions. Now, here's how it works. Every Minnesotan is eligible to submit one name. It needs to be shorter than 30 characters, including spaces. Adam and Jordana, is this the year? Are you going to participate? Are you going to submit a name for one of these 8 snowplows that MnDOT will name?
Remember we did this with AI winter. Last year? You typed in AI.
Yes.
Oh, did I name it?
Yeah, and they had real...
They were decent, yeah.
Yeah, they were had to do with quick takes and stuff.
It was maybe, because I'm not that creative to think of, and there are so many people that are much more creative than I. So no, not for me.
Well, I know DeRussia has continued his campaign to get Chasen DeSlesha.
I mean, that's a pretty good name. That's pretty good.
Somebody texted in earlier, Vanita Snowcar.
Okay.
Try again.
I don't love it. I feel like you need to be more of a play on.
Oh, wow, I thought that was pretty good.
Snow car? Yeah.
It's a snow
like
car.
Car.
Like
yeah,
a plow.
I get that. Yeah, I don't love it. We got to do better. All
if
right.
If you
want
to name
creative.
One for me, it would just be Plowed Again. Adam is plowed again. What a shock.
I got again, I'm not that creative, so we will not be submitting one as a show.
As a show.
Unless you guys think of a really good one where
by all means text in.
We can win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know Chad loves this too. Chad loves
yes.
Huge.
I know.
Yeah.
So text in at noon and just mm-hmm. send all your plow ideas to mm-hmm. him.
Minnesota restaurants are grappling with how to adapt to a new state law that will ban them from adding junk fees to customers' checks. The so-called junk fee law will begin on January 1st. It will prevent businesses from tacking on all sorts of extra charges to your transaction. Of course, the most popular of this were many restaurants in Minneapolis were adding 3-5% as a health and wellness fee here in the Twin Cities. The law does exclude charges, the tip or tax or delivery charge. Those three can still be added to your bill, but nothing else will be allowed to be added. What's your guys' reaction to this?
See, I'm reading this, and it feels to me like this is just a shell game, that they're saying, okay, you can't label, okay, like, for example, I'm reading the Axios article, like some restaurants add a 3 to 5% health and wellness fee.
Yes.
So instead of doing that, they're just adding, but the new law allows restaurants to add an automatic gratuity, but it must clearly be labeled and then go to the wait staff. Well, how is that different from adding a 3 to 5% wellness fee?
Well, it's basically saying that that's the only fee that you can tack on that goes to your waiters. Like, basically, okay. They're saying, here's the three fees you can tack on, like delivery, tax, mm-hmm. and tip. And you cannot add. You can't keep going past that.
I think this is a good step. I think it's a good – it is getting confusing. But you're right. Those extra fees, we don't know to check for them. We often get screwed. Sometimes a little bit of a tip is on there. I think this is, we expect there to be tax. We expect there to be a tip if it's, you know, delivery or whatever. And then what was the other one?
A delivery charge can be on there as well if your food's being delivered, yeah.
I think that's a good first step. Yeah.
I hope so. To me, it doesn't seem like it's just, like I said, you're just labeling a junk fee a different name and it's not a junk fee anymore.
I think we should go further and get rid of all of those fees.
David thinks that workers should not be tipped at all.
Yeah, I did not say that. Should just include it. Include it in the cost.
Yeah.
Although, I got to be honest, we go to Reverie in South Minneapolis, and it's a no-tip. They call it a no-tipping joint.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, I mean, we go up to the counter and we order. You know, yeah. They bring it. Then they bring it. It's really nice.
It is nice. And again, like when I was in Iceland, we went to a pub one night, and the bartender, he was an American, by the way, and then the bartender was like, no, I don't want this. Nope, we don't take tips, and this is my job, and...
Wow.
And it was such a shocking thing. He was very adamant about it, but like they pay him a decent wage for the work he does.
Just like every other worker, you get paid a wage. A thing costs what it costs. We should just move on and stop that whole nonsense. All right. Finally, here in Quick Takes, as Americans are getting ready for the holidays, many of us are heading to round after round of parties and get-togethers, which obviously involve a lot of drinking. And a new report just out says, get this, during the holidays, 1 in 5, that's 20% of Americans, admit that they drink and drive.
Wow.
Over the holiday season. Meanwhile, of course, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says that the day before Thanksgiving, 35% of fatal crashes were due to alcohol consumption. Does it surprise you, that first stat, 1 in 5 Americans admit they drink and drive over the holidays?
Yes. That admit it, that means more do it.
That's what I'm going to say.
And don't
that means
admit
there's
it.
A lot more that are lying. But, okay, drinking and driving, that means, okay, you've had a glass of wine at your holiday party or maybe 2 glasses of wine.
Oh.
And still, or is that people admitting that I've driven intoxicated?
I think it's
not this specific stat is not specifically making a distinction between those.
Oh, if you have 1 glass of wine and then get in the car and you're a person who can handle one glass of wine, I don't think you're legally drunk.
No.
And I think that's legal.
Exactly.
So you're right. Maybe I do need clarification on that. Because there has been time where I've had one glass of wine and mm-hmm. then driven home.
Right.
You don't have the second because you know that would do you in.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are going to holiday parties and not getting drunk, but having a drink and then getting behind the wheel and driving home.
Okay, so David, what was the question? I'm sorry. Am I surprised by that
number?
Just
does that surprise you? It's 20% of Americans.
I guess I would be surprised if they admitted to driving while drunk.
Yeah.
You know, the one glass of wine or one beer, I think that's different. But I thought we were past this. Not only do we have mothers against drunk driving and dads against drunk driving, we have Uber and Lyft and taxis. We should be past this.
Because those are common sense decisions. And when people drink, they lose the common sense.
Okay.
And it's like, I can drive home. That's why. Nobody makes great decisions when they're intoxicated or buzzed.
Okay.
That's sad. That's it.
Okay. I agree with all of that. We went bowling. And we had a great time bowling. You can see the video on my Instagram at Jordana Verde, at WCCO Instagram.
Yeah.
Did you post it, Adam?
Yes, I believe I did.
Okay, Adam Carter's. We also spoke with Phil Weber, who is the owner and proprietor of Park Tavern. And we had a great conversation with him. He's had a tough year. You'll hear that next.
All right, so about it was like 2 weeks ago. You know, what even started this conversation? Oh, you said you wanted
to go
bowling.
Mm-hmm.
So we made it happen. We went to Park Tavern in St. Louis Park, and we went bowling.
Mm-hmm.
And we, Matt, our social media guru, filmed us, and we did a little video there. And we also talked to Phil Weber. I always want to say Pete Weber because Pete Weber is like the bombastic professional bowler. But Phil Weber, who,
the fact that you know the name of a professional bowler,
it's just
bowler
because
is
of
impressive.
Videos. It's because there's video. The guy is crazy. But we talked to him about, you know, especially around the Thanksgiving holiday, which is when we were there, about how important bowling is. But we also obviously talked to him about how Park Tavern continues to recover from the awful tragedy that happened there. And on that note, yesterday, so this is, we talked to Phil before,
yes,
2 weeks ago, so we didn't, yesterday, Stephen Bailey, the guy who was allegedly drunk and mm-hmm. plowed into the patio at Park Tavern, killing a worker and another guy who was celebrating an event there, registered, you know, .3, which is extremely drunk. He pleaded not guilty to those crimes yesterday, which is a separate matter, but I just wanted to get that out there, that this interview was before mm-hmm. this had happened. But
Phil also addressed,
we
did ask him about that, and he addressed that a little bit. So here's our conversation with Phil Weber from Park Tavern. So we're here with Phil Weber, the longtime owner of Park Tavern.
Long time.
Phil, just curious to know if anybody has ever bowled worse than we did today.
Two other people.
Two other people. In the history of Park Tavern.
45 years.
Do we get a trophy? Do we get a plaque for that? Or
you do.
Okay.
Did they ever come back? A lot, actually, yeah. I cater to the recreational bowler.
Right.
I don't cater to the good bowler.
No, Jordan and I were remarking, like, the bowling alley is the only place where, like, time is stopped.
Correct.
But it's totally cool and hip at the same time, mm-hmm. right?
It is, and I've fought modernization as much as I could, but unfortunately I had to keep up with the times and do everything you could do. But I don't know if you noticed, though, but I have string bowling now.
Yeah, what is that about? I was wondering about that.
String bowling, unfortunately, bowling mechanics no longer exist. It's a lost trade.
Really?
They don't. Yeah, my retired mechanic, Bill, God bless me, he was a wonderful guy. He was 78 years old, and he had to retire finally. There was nobody to replace him. So 2 summers ago, I took out all the old bowling machines and put in all the brand-new string bowling, which eliminates the need for a mechanic.
So all new bowling has strings on the pins?
I think in the next 10 to 15 years, every bowling center will be string bowling.
So, Phil, what is it about bowling that's timeless, though? Something you do for your kids' birthday parties and something we enjoy as we get older? My teenage kids are here. I mean, what is it about bowling?
Bowling transcends all ages, all social, economic, I mean, everything, really. Everybody bowls. And again, I cater to the recreational bowler, so I don't really, and I play the music videos, which you can see are up here. I make it an event. I make it a fun kind of a thing. And everybody can do it because it's not about the skill level. It's about bringing people together and just having a good time.
I feel better.
I used to be a thing where Thanksgiving week, either Thanksgiving night or the night before, people would come out bowling. Is that still a thing?
It's a huge day.
Is it?
And also, we do a Thanksgiving buffet every year, and I think this year I've got about 500 reservations. And with your reservation, you get an hour of free bowling. So, again, it's a family function. I mean, I cater to a lot of families in St. Louis Park generationally. I've got a family down the 11th frame, the Fallnesses, who've been coming here for probably 15 years. So I'm working on multiple generations of them, too.
I love that. Yeah, that's great. And Phil, you've had a tough year. You know, there was a terrible incident here at Park Tavern. We covered it on the radio, and we spoke with you on the radio. How are you guys healing?
You know, it's again, it's a process. It's just sort of a hole in your heart that never completely closes. Just you need to have as much positive around as you can. And people are doing a lot better now.
Great. I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you for having us today. And I'm loving these sweatshirts.
Well, thank you.
I'm loving the sweatshirts.
It's sort of vintage.
Thanks for having us. And you'll have to wash everything down after you stunk it up so bad.
Just have fun. That's all I, I care about. Just have fun.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Phil.
Oh, you're welcome.
String bowling. Now, it didn't quite get explained when we were talking about it, but I noticed that when we started bowling that all the pins had strings coming out of the top of them. And I guess I didn't pay any attention to it until he said that. So what he was saying is that the old method of, you know, bowling, pins get knocked down. They go into the hopper.
Oh, is that what it's called? The hopper? Yeah.
But then they're redistributed back into the machine. Those machines are becoming or are obsolete now, so that the new method now is all these pins have strings on them, and what makes it easier to reset the pins at the end of each frame.
So you can see them. The strings are actually attached to the top of each pin. And when you knock them down, or after, you know, your second, whatever it's called, your bowl, you can see the strings. They look like little marionettes at the end of the aisle.
And I'm no bowling expert, but I would think that a bowling traditionalist would feel like that you're not getting the true accurate.
Really?
Well, yeah, it changes the pin action.
Changes the pin action.
Whoa. How so?
Well, there's a string attached to it. That's an extra, some minimal
when
weight
that pin
attached to it.
You know, when it gets hit and it flies, that string attached to it is impacting the way it spins and flies and knocks down other pins.
Right.
Oh, of course. Yes. It can't, like, flip over itself.
Or,
oh, of course it is. So, wait, does professional bowling have this? It can't possibly. No, I'm sure they still have engineers that are working and fixing
I would think
it.
So, but I guess for the average mom-and-pop neighborhood bowling alley that they can't do that anymore, but just because they can't find the – boy, you know, if your kid's in college, you might want to get him into, you know, bowling mechanics.
This makes sense.
He or she could be in demand.
This is the reason I only bowled a 67.
Yeah, that's it.
It's the Phil, you should have told me. It's the strings.
It's the pin action.
I'm truly an excellent bowler.
Yeah.
It's the strings. I think that's definitely what it is. That's why, isn't it? And you could hear my kids were in the background.
Yeah.
They came out to hang out with
great
us.
Great ambient noise.
And bowl,
bowling,
and
you know,
it was really fun.
It was great sport ambient noises of pins being knocked down.
And thank God not yelling at each other.
Speaking of strings attached... strings attached to money that's gone to Ukraine. Now, J.P. Lindsley, we've been talking to him since the war started.
Mm-hmm. Years.
He was published in The Hill in the last week talking about how, you know, lots of people have assumed, especially, you know, opponents of the president-elect have said, boy, good luck to you. He's buddies with Putin.
Mm-hmm.
Once Trump gets into power, goodbye, Ukraine, because he's just going to let Vladimir Putin run roughshod over the rest of Ukraine. J.P. Lindsley says not so fast and he says on the ground that Ukrainians actually cheering another Trump presidency.
Why? How? For what reason? Let's find out with Joe Lindsley next.
We're lucky to have Joe Lindsley at our beck and call from Ukraine. Since the war started, we've had Joe on frequently, and I noticed over the weekend, The Hill, which is a publication here in the U.S., had a byline from Joe, and I read the headline, and I was kind of shocked because lots of people, I think Donald Trump's coming in, and with Donald Trump's coziness, for lack of a better term, with Vladimir Putin, that would be bad for Ukraine.
And America First attitude.
Right.
You know, we've even heard J.D. Vance say that he wants an isolationist policy with Ukraine.
And one of the lines that I read from Joe is the media won't report it. Well, we're reporting, but many Ukrainians are very excited at Donald Trump's return. Well, let's ask Joe why. He joins us on the John Schuster Coble Banker Hotline. Joe, thank you for joining us. Why is that? And explain that, because I think a lot of Americans feel otherwise.
Yeah, hello, Adam and Jordana. Hello from a snowy Kyiv. And, you know, I observed this. I was here in Kyiv, the capital of Ukraine, on the day after the election. And for the preceding several months, there was a very heavy atmosphere here. People were very depressed. They really couldn't see a way, I think, out of a lot of this. And a lot of that was due to the restrictions that the Biden administration continued to place on Ukraine. And even restrictions from Washington on the UK and France from helping Ukraine, from giving Ukraine long-range weapons. And so when Trump was elected, it wasn't this, like, there was not a sense of jubilation, but there was a sense that at least with someone like Trump, there would be clarity. It would be either a firm yes or a firm no, rather than sort of the gray in between. But that sort of gave people here a shift in mindset. It gave them a goal, a new objective, something kind of fresh to work toward. And I think as we've seen these past months, you know, especially in what I call the court of Mar-a-Lago, there's been a lot of maneuvering on all different topics to influence the shape of the incoming administration. And, you know, we've seen, I mean, President Zelensky just said yesterday, he said that Putin is only afraid of, Putin's not afraid of very much. He said he's afraid of Donald Trump and maybe of China. I think some Ukrainians might take issue with that. I think they'd say, well, Putin's afraid of free people. But this is very notable that Zelensky would say that. And I think he's been very shrewd here. And if we look at, there was an extraordinary moment, Adam and Jordana, that happened in Paris over the past weekend with the reopening of Notre Dame. And President Macron, I think he knew exactly what he was doing when, in his choosing of the world leaders that he brought there. You know, Elon Musk was there in Notre Dame. Elon Musk has been making fun of Zelensky in the past months. But President Macron also invited, of course, Trump, who sat next to him, and President Zelensky. And he's trying to, you know, shape. It was almost, to me, as I observed it, it was a moment of saying, you know, we need to remember what our values are as Western civilization, as democracies, and you know, that we have more power than we realize. And, you know, since then, since that moment in Paris, I started to see a shift in what Trump is saying about Ukraine. Now he's saying that Ukrainians, not only Zelensky, he's speaking of Ukrainian people, too. Previously, it was all about Zelensky. And now he's saying Zelensky and the Ukrainians are willing to negotiate. And previously, Trump generally only said that of the Russians. He made the Russians seem to be the more reasonable people. And now there's a shift saying, actually, wait, it's Ukrainians that want peace and freedom, and they're willing to negotiate. And so there is a shift happening. You know, it's a continual process. And even President Zelensky, after Trump made those comments, said, yeah, we're willing to negotiate, but we also recognize the stark reality that Putin does not want to end this war, that Putin wants to destroy us. So I think there are a lot of positive signs, but I think for, you know, Ukrainians and those who support Ukraine, you know, there's never a moment to let up on making the case to Team Trump. And that's, you know, my story in The Hill. It was a bit cheeky because several of the people, I know most of the people I mentioned in that story. I proposed three Ukrainians who I think would be good representatives to the United States, and four, actually, Americans who I thought would be good representatives from the U.S. to Ukraine in a way that could kind of help break the divide between MAGA world and Ukraine. And the Ukrainians I list there, I think, you know, if American Republicans heard these people, they would love them. But these voices are not amplified by either the government here in Kyiv or by the media. For example, I mentioned the warrior called Gandalf. That's his call sign. He's from the Azov Regiment, which Russia has really maligned. Azov is sort of like the Cajun Navy, just the people that want to defend their faith, family, and freedom. And Gandalf's a great character, the Serhiy Sarkovsky, who defeated Roger Federer at Wimbledon, and now he's a soldier. And so just some great Ukrainian personalities. And then on the American side, to break through this, you know, there's some people I know, like Morgan Ortegas. She used to work for Mike Pompeo. She's very close to Donald Trump. She doesn't talk about Ukraine very much, but she never attacks Ukraine. She understands the situation, and I think someone like her, who she's a Navy veteran, who does have the ear of Trump, could help bridge the divide between the MAGA world and the Ukrainian people.
Joe, I'm always so grateful to hear your voice. You sound well. But you mentioned that Zelensky is willing to negotiate. What is he willing to negotiate for? Is he at a place where he's willing to cede land back to Russia to make this war stop?
Well, and I think when for the Ukrainians, whatever, like the international framework is sort of talking about ceding land. But for Ukrainians, you know, every time you talk about giving up land, that also means the people on that land, you know, the people that then have to live under Russian occupation. And so I think Zelensky is cognizant of this because the public makes him aware of it, that they don't want to give up, people who are displaced, they want to be able to go back home. And so that's why it's a tricky thing. But I think Zelensky realizes the language of Trump, you know, Mr. Art of the Deal, and he's speaking that. And you know, he's trying to construct a situation where, you know, again, where Ukraine is sort of the more reasonable partner here. And I think one thing that Ukrainians have done to give them a lot of more leverage on this, it's something that no one talks about anymore. But, you know, Ukrainians are still in the Kursk region of Russia. They're still on Russian soil. And that's caused a big problem for Russia. Russia's really trying to downplay it. But if we look at, you know, the collapse of the regime in Syria, which was, Russia totally backed the Assad regime. Russia has now lost a lot of its military resources they had in Syria. They had a warm water port on the Mediterranean, on the Syrian coast. They no longer have access to that. It's a major collapse for Russia as well. And I do think that the distraction of having Ukrainians on Russian soil has weakened Russia's ability to maneuver here. And in fact, Putin fired the governor of that Ukrainian occupied region in Russia, the second governor he's fired in several months. And he's been unable to get that back. And so that actually was giving Ukraine a lot of leverage here, to maybe trade, let's take Ukrainian land back and we'll give you back this Kursk region of Russia. I think that could actually be a move that would be acceptable maybe, to Trump and to others.
Talking to J.P. Lindsley from Ukraine. But as recently, Joe, as Sunday when he sat down with Kristen Welker on Meet the Press, President-elect Trump says, that Ukraine possibly could receive less funding and that, European countries should pitch in more. I mean, you mentioned that the uncertainty over what's coming from the Biden administration has really worn down Ukrainians at this point, but they hear that from Donald Trump saying, well, they possibly could get less funding. That can't be good news to them.
Well, yes and no, because partly I would take issue with the question that that Kristen asked the president-elect, because President Zelensky's been making this very clear the past couple months. Ukraine is not asking for more money. He said Ukraine right now has enough money to sustain operations for more than a year, possibly several years. What they need are better weapons and permission to actually use them. And that's been what the Biden administration, under the policy of National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, has been reluctant to do. And so for the media to ask, are you going to reduce aid for Ukraine? Well, that's not even what Ukraine's not asking for more money. That sort of feeds into, I think, the anti-Ukraine narrative. Zelensky is very clear. It's not more money. It's support that actually works. Weapons Ukrainians can use to hit the sources of Russian hits upon Ukrainian cities. And, for example, something that cost America, officially not much, but strengthening the sanctions. The Biden administration still gives waivers to Russian banks only if they work in the oil business, which are the most, the most powerful Russian banks have been protected. They've not been sanctioned precisely because they help facilitate oil transactions, which is exactly what has enabled Russia to continue going. And so if those things could be fixed, that's really what Ukraine wants. It's not more money and more aid.
Thanks for laying that out, Joe. And Joe, how are you? Where are you? How are you? How are you getting by and surviving and your group?
It's we are Ukrainian Freedom News team. We continue to get drones and trucks and vehicles, to our friends at the front. I continue to report every single weekday for more than 1,020 days of this war now on Chicago WGN Radio. And we had a group here last week of leading Republicans, people close to Trump, came here to Ukraine to very courageously to find out the reality. And so these are signs of hope for Ukraine to see this. And so it's been quite a busy time. There are frequent blackouts throughout Ukraine, but I have to say it's not as bad as everyone anticipated. And actually, since the American election, what had been really several times a week, very terrible attacks on Ukrainian cities, they've been reduced. I think Putin is waiting. He's also got the Syria mess, but he's also waiting to figure out what to do next. So I can't even tell you right now when was the last time I heard an explosion. It was at least several weeks ago. So I have a little bit of peace of mind these days.
That's interesting. Yeah. You think it's because of the distraction of Syria? Putin's got different priorities?
I think it's that, and I think it's also realizing the Kremlin's going to have to change strategy. Because, there's a new administration and things could be very different. Mm-hmm. And that also points to the question of, people say, why won't Europe pull its weight? Well, if you look at, France and the UK have wanted to give Ukraine these Storm Shadow scalp missiles. They've given some of them, but they've wanted to let Ukraine use them to hit targets on Russian soil. And it was the White House that said no. So, but Germany's an outlier. Germany's been reluctant to help Ukraine. But countries like France and UK have been trying to do more, and it's the U.S. that has said no. We also look at the tiny kingdom of Denmark. They just a new batch of F-16 fighter jets just arrived in Ukraine from Denmark. It was only last summer that the U.S. gave permission because it's American technology. Even if Denmark owns it, you needed the White House's permission. Finally, that arrived, but it's a tiny nation of Denmark that's sending F-16s. To Ukraine, not the U.S. So I think Europeans want to do more, but they've been limited so far by Washington.
JP, continue to be safe. Thank you so much for the time, as always, and a Merry Christmas to you and to you and all the people of Ukraine.
Thank you, Joe.
Indeed. Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah to you all, and I look forward to our next conversation. Good evening from Kiev.
Yeah, thank you. JP Lindsley, live with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. We'll react to what he had to say because got a lot to react to there. 10:50 on CCO.
What a fascinating interview with Joe Lindsley. I am shocked that he says a Trump administration mm-hmm. could be good for Ukraine.
And he's taken a lot of heat for it on X, which I saw this article and I saw a lot of the responses. And these aren't just, mm-hmm. these are other journalists and other people, mm-hmm. Very critical saying, oh, sure, he's just a Trump lackey now. And it's very interesting. And no, if you've heard Joe on with us, he's been very critical of the Biden administration over the last, well over a year with exactly what he said, just the uncertainty over weapons that they need. Mm-hmm. And, if that's the case, what he said is that uncertainty, knowing certainty is better than having the uncertainty. Well, if the certainty is like, oh, we're done here. U.S. is not helping Ukraine anymore.
That's a bad certainty.
I was going to say, I don't think that certainty is better than the uncertainty of what may or may not come from the Biden administration. But, and part of it, too, is just, seeing this with the French president, with a lot of the media, with so many now, as they realize that it's fairly clear that to win over Donald Trump, you need adulation. And you, for lack of a better term, you need to, kisses you know what. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is part of the strategy of, and I could see that. You don't want to start out by saying, oh, God, we're screwed now that Donald Trump is going to be president of the United States. That's not a good place to start from. So
I also don't think Donald Trump knows who J.P. Lindsley is.
Oh, yeah.
But you're saying.
I'm not talking about him.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Zelensky and yes. And with many people and French president and saying that. Okay, flattery is going to be our best way in to a second. So they've learned a lot from the first Donald Trump administration.
And the whole thing is fascinating. I know that JP tells us the truth, that he tells us what's going on the ground. He tells us the mood of Ukrainians and what's happening. He's really got a good feel for it. So I definitely trust what he tells us.
Mm-hmm.
What he said, though, this new quirk with the fall of Syria, the fall of the Assad regime, does put a wrench into Vladimir Putin's plans. Mm-hmm. And the decimation of Syria's army and weaponry that was supplied by the Russians to the Syrian army that is now systematically being dismantled by the Israelis does put an extra pressure on Vladimir Putin. And I hope it is to the benefit of the Ukrainians.
To regift or not to regift? Oh. That's the question. Much lighter topics with our holiday showdown next.